Life Audio.
Welcome to the Jesus is All We Need podcast with me, your host, Jason Sawtelle. This is the show where we dig into the personal testimonies of people in the news, celebrities, and folks just like you and me in a way that will leave you encouraged. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Jesus is All We Need podcast. Welcome to the Jesus is All We Need podcast. Today we have a very, very special guest. We have Paul Conway, who is a retired assistant chief of the Milwaukee Fire Department. He started his career back in 1980 when I was only 6 years old, and he finished up in 2012, as I mentioned, as an assistant chief in Milwaukee. His resume that I have in front of me is just spectacular, but what we'll do at the end of the show is we'll send you over to his website so you can see all the awesome and cool things he has going on. Anyways, Paul, welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Jason, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. Quite frankly, anything that has the title Jesus in it is going to be a good thing. And I'm blessed to be here. And I'm really, if you didn't do all the great work you do, I wouldn't be sitting here. So,
oh man, I appreciate it.
It's all good.
It means a lot.
Yeah.
It means a lot, man. And, you know, like you say, you know, when it has the word Jesus in it, it's going to be good until we go and mess it all up, you know? So
well, that's our job. That's what we do. We're falling. That's what we do.
Right. If we weren't a mess, let's be honest, there wouldn't be a need for Jesus. And God knows that, you know, and that's what I love about it so much. But anyways, you know, I have been kind of following your career little bits in here, not just because of what you did in the fire department, but what you've also done outside the fire department, which I know you hate this word, but it's kind of what you're famous for, if you will, is making your leather shields. And for those of you that are not in the fire service, they're those shields that sit on the front of our helmets that identify who we are, where we work, and all that cool stuff. So Paul, give me a little insight on how you started up Conway Shields and a little background on that.
Absolutely. The elevator pitch goes as follows. We, as you said, I came out of City of Milwaukee in 1984, and in our academy class, I ran into a guy that we became good friends. He was originally from a pig farm in Iowa, so he was a heck of a worker, but he, quite frankly, I used to joke, I don't think you can spell firefighter, but we became good friends, and there's a lot of reasons why. And after we got into the field, Craig went to order a shield for where he was assigned, and they told him it would be about 16 weeks. Mm-hmm. And he came to me and said, you know, hey, you were in the business. Is this true? And I said, yeah, that's how long it takes. There's one game in town and that's it. So he said, well, somebody should do something about that. And Craig was a guy that was that kind of dude. And so I happened to be rooming with a guy whose dad was in the leather business at the time. And he said, come and, go by my dad's house, pick up some leather. So I did. And then Craig and I, in 1984, started Conway Shield. We incorporated in 85, but we were actually making shields in 84. So in 1985, we started as a partnership. We did that. Our first year, we went to the Baltimore Fire Show. And I think we made, let's say, 400 shields in that first year. And So it was like, wow, this is great. So we decided we'd keep it up. We do it for beer money and have fun and travel around and visit people. And as it turned out, about 2 years into it, Craig's wife kind of gave him the idea of, well, it's the business or it's me. And he sold me his half of the business. And then shortly later on that year, he had neither the business nor her. So,
oh no.
Yes, didn't work out as planned. Right. So he came back in and became an employee, but we've been good friends, you know, ever since. So that's how we started. One thing led to another. We started making shields. And to give you an idea, right now we probably make over 100,000, probably 110,000 shields a year.
Wow.
So we've grown a little bit.
A little bit from 400 to over 100,000. Yeah.
We keep roughly 40 people gainfully employed and take care of them. But so that led into, well, we got to do other things. So we realized there was the same gap for protective clothing, so on and so forth. So we started doing that. And then our latest endeavors are training, in that there's a lot of experience that I think needs to be handed down, passed along person to person. And so we started a training division and we've been doing that. That's been successful. And, we've just been blessed. It's not
right.
Me, you know, it's just not me. It's not, I barely got out of high school.
Right.
And I hated every minute of it because all I ever was going to do was be a firefighter. So I never thought I would need math. I never thought I would need English. I really didn't need anything. I'm just going to ride the tailboard, drag my knuckles, and have fun.
Right.
So that's kind of where the company is. That's you know, the short story.
It's just mind blowing, man. And I, that's why I love stories like yours, because there's so many firefighters out there who have started successful things that have blessed others, blessed their families, blessed employees and everything. And they're so humble. Sometimes they don't want to talk about it, you know? And I'm like, I get the humble side, but it's so inspiring when we can tell the stories of, hey, God's given us these gifts and abilities. This is what we've done. And this is where we're at. And then to hear that now you're doing the training and everything else, bro, that's huge, because I am a huge believer in discipleship for the obvious reasons, because God says that we need to do that. But you've created something where you can, quote, disciple to firefighters, as you mentioned in there, with the training side too, which is fantastic, man. You get to pass down things that you've learned, things that you've seen other guys learn. They can pass it down. And that's the biggest thing that we need to do in the fire department and in the church, is pass down the things that we've learned, the blessings we've been given. And I know that you do that on all levels. So, bro, kudos to you. And the last thing I'm going to throw in there, thank you for talking about the part about struggling your way through high school. Cause I too, well, you didn't drop out. I'm a high school dropout, you know? So there are those of us who can make it through, and I'm not suggesting drop out of high school or get bad grades, but there are a lot of avenues for a lot of people with different personalities.
No, absolutely. And quite frankly, I wasn't going to drop out, but I was probably going to get tossed out. And fortunately, my last semester, I managed to see the light and take care of some things I needed to take care of, and that got me a diploma. But that's how close I really was, and because it just didn't matter to me. I knew what I wanted to do, and it's funny, you know. The funny story is I really think education is important,
mm-hmm,
but
I agree.
I look and I say, so when I made chauffeur, I sure wish I understood hydraulics better. I sure wish I had that algebra.
Right.
And then when I made company officer, I thought, well, I sure wish I didn't spell like a 5-year-old.
Right.
And then I made chief officer, and then thought, oh my God, I sure wish I understood English, because I have to write reports. I have to write emails to people that I'm horrible.
Right.
And I
hear you on that. And that's the cool thing about the fire service. And I'm going to be straight up honest with you. I never took the chauffeur, what we called in the Oakland Fire Department, the engineer's exam. So that's the hardest freaking exam out there, man. People don't realize that. I mean, when I went through the lieutenant's exam, I truthfully found it very easy because I'm like, wait, I just got to talk my way through this. Okay, I'm going to talk until these guys get tired of hearing me and say, shut up. Let's move on to the next question, you know? So that was actually a lot easier for me. But you hit the nail on the head. When it came to the lieutenant stuff, I really got stressed out when it came to the end of the month reports and to do them right, you know, and to sit under my captain, because the way that it worked in Oakland is at a single house, you would have a lieutenant on like the A and the B shift, and then you would have a captain on the C shift. At a double house, you would have, you know, a lieutenant, a captain, either on the engine or truck, usually it'd switch off and stuff. But as a lieutenant, even in the double house, I would always want to take the paperwork from my captain just because it's the right thing to do, as you know.
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah.
But bro, I tell you what, I did miss out on some stuff there. And it was, you know, late nights, 3 a.m, staying up trying to figure it all out, where if I would have had that education, it would have made life a lot easier. But let's talk more about your fire department side, man. You know, people know me, and whenever I run into a chief, the first thing I say is, oh, big deal. Chiefs don't impress me. What impresses me is a company officer, an engineer, and a firefighter. And you know, I'm saying that out of total respect, chief, because you've been in the firehouses and stuff. And we do have a sort of level of respect for you, you know, so no, just kidding. But let's talk about your days, you know, working on the companies, you know, either as firefighters and officers and things you experienced. And what was the job like for you? What were the experiences that you enjoyed and maybe didn't enjoy?
So for starters, I will be the first one to say that if I didn't have good firefighters or good company officers, me and the buggy that I rode around in, we're not going to do much. And quite frankly, I was the type of chief that firefighters liked, because I usually, now in Milwaukee, we get out of the car, we go to the front of the building. And unless it was really rip roaring, a lot of times I didn't get out of the car.
Right.
Because I knew the engine was making a knock. I knew the truck was opening up. They were doing primaries. I could see it. You know, you can see it in front of you. And I would get on the radio and I'd find the senior captain and I'd say, yeah, you got it. Yeah, we're just, you know, we're going to hit some hot spots. And I'd say, peace, I'm going home. Yep. And on the way home on a cold winter day, I might swing by their firehouse and put their coffee on, because I knew they would be coming home cold and wet. But I can't do, you know, we can't do the job without you. And I think that, you know, one of the worst things that chief can ever do is think that somehow he has gathered importance, because that's wrong. So life in a firehouse. So I came in under the last, I guess I would say, of the hard-nosed Korean War or some World War II guys that, they just really didn't care. You know, I think of my first year, I had a captain. We were in a double company. I was on an engine. I had a captain on my company and a lieutenant on a truck. And I used to have to talk to the lieutenant. Mm-hmm. I would talk to the lieutenant. He would talk to the captain, because I, as a probationary firefighter, that wasn't my job. Sit down, do your job, shut up. Captain will give you orders. Yep. So that was kind of where we were. So I sometimes think it's funny when people say, oh, we want to go back to the way things were. Dude, you have no idea what it was like.
Right.
You know, you really don't. Because, you know, and I think of one day, you know, and you think of all of this conflict resolution stuff that we had. And I think of one day, I already had some time on. I had probably 3 years in. I was cooking at the time. And we used to shop on our offs, because it's just what we did. So I'd bring the groceries in from my day off. Mm-hmm. And I come in, and the company officer is sitting at his desk. And he's looking down and he's filling out a report. And without looking up at me, he says, you're detailed engine 2 today.
Hmm.
And it was one of our guys. It was the last day that he was going to be in a firehouse. He was retiring.
Oh, bro, that's a rough detail.
And I said, Lou, I'm cooking.
Right.
And he never looked up from his report. He said, I said, you're detailed to engine 2. So I walked in, put the groceries in. Told somebody else, hey, this is what I bought. This is what I planned on making. Grabbed my gear, and away I went to engine 2. And certainly I said a few choice things in the car on the way over there. But, you know, I look back at it now and I say, I was the junior member. All of those guys were with each other for years. Somebody had to go. We were one body over. It was going to be me. Makes perfect sense now.
Right.
At the time, it did, you know, I was like, I'm being stuck, you know, this is baloney. But the reality is, I look and I think, that's the kind of officer I had. He never looked up from his paperwork.
Right.
He gave me an order. I questioned it. He gave it to me again. And I knew that I was not going to say it. I was not going to say anything else.
Right.
You know, and you think of, and again, you think of how things have changed. Well, you know, the guy would have been in trouble.
I hear you from, because from my level, I had those officers. But what the little tweak on it that made those officers perfect were they gave you a direct order. You followed a direct order, but they saw you for who you were and you saw them for who they were. And there was that personality between you. So like with my Cappy, which I wrote about in my book, bro, he's one of the most amazing captains I ever worked for. You know, he came on the department in the 60s, you know, and as a, yeah. And to be with him, but he always would give us a direct order because he knew we would follow it because we respected his authority. But on the other side, he respected us. So it was like a grace thing that went all ways, you know, and it flowed perfectly. Where I've had those captains where they would be like, give you a direct order. And you're like, okay, like with Cappy, I'd be like, bro, but wouldn't it make more sense if I clean the toilets first, then wax the floors, you know, and some, and he'd be like, yeah, totally. Just, he'd be like, get the job done. I don't care. Where the other officers would say, no, I want you to wax the floors, then clean the toilets. Like, bro, that makes no sense, dude. But that's how they wanted it, you know? So I hear you on that, you know, and a lot of guys today, they don't get that because of conflict resolution. And I'm still a believer when you're given an order by a superior, you do the dang order. You follow the order, dude, unless it's unsafe, unethical, or all that other stuff.
Correct. Is it a lawful order, and is it safe, and is it a lawful order? Those are the two things I always live by. But so anyway, so we were blessed. We ran heavy. We ran 5-5. So, you know, it was a great job. Still the best job in the world. Still a fantastic place to work, but definitely changed. Yeah, so, you know, what it was like in a firehouse, my years as a firefighter, I spent a few years there. That was a special operations house, so we did all the diving. So I didn't know it in the school, but they asked who wanted to be a fire department diver, and I was dumb enough to raise my hand, and that, I found out, is how I got to that house. And I did 4 years there where I was, you know, I had my share of recovering citizens from the water, from the depths of the water.
Because you know, I know people listen to this podcast all around the United States, but I'm in California, dude. So let's be honest, we don't have cold water drownings per se. You know, it's they're drownings for the most part. But you guys up there, you have frigid waters where, I mean, people, they get in it and within a minute or two, they can go under, correct? Just from the cold part.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we did a study here. As anecdotal as it may have been, when that plane took off in D.C. and it didn't ice in the 80s and they crashed it into the bridge and then put it into the river. Mm-hmm. And there was a gentleman there that was saving people and then eventually went under and he lost his own life. Mm-hmm. So our job did a study where we cut a hole in the ice, put a rescue diver in, and then they found two dopes, one of them being me, and had me go in there in just a uniform and see how long I could stay before I slipped under the water. The rescue diver would drag us up. But you're right. It's very cold and people don't last long. We usually, you know, the Milwaukee River is the lake. We're assigned, Milwaukee's on Lake Michigan. So diving in Lake Michigan is one thing. The visibility is great, especially in the wintertime. And the bottom of the lake, there's nothing there. It's just boulders and sand. It's a, you know, it's a carve out from a glacier. The Milwaukee River, on the other hand, is a cesspool of dirt, filth, and muck, and you dive in there, you will get ill. But so I did most of my diving in
there. All the years of the industry and all that stuff and everything, the dumping and everything.
Over the years, correct. So that was an interesting life, but yeah.
So when you were diving in and you recovered a body, I mean, that's a rough job, bro, because the only recoveries I've truly been part of in the fire department would be like on a cut and rescue, you know, a car that's been mangled and we got to get him out. And maybe we knew that the patient had died. And so we're letting CHP or the highway patrol do their thing before we cut him out. But recovering a body out of the water, that's got to be tough, bro. I mean, on a lot of levels. I mean, if you wouldn't mind talking about that.
Well, no, sure. So, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but there were really two incidents that come to mind. One of them was there was a boat crash in the river, I mean, on the lake, and the boat was 90 degrees to the surface of the water. It was just the bow was up out of the water, and I was the primary diver. We took a boat out there, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and my boss said, hey, you know, you're it. So I splashed, and the tarp was down covering the control of the boat, you know, the boat controls or whatever. Anyway, I rolled that thing up and there was two guys sitting in their chairs and they were deceased, but they were burned real bad. Ooh. And I dropped my flashlight. It was one of those, you go, whoa,
I like doing a search in a fire and you actually come upon someone sometimes. I understand what you're saying. And just so the people listening, it's morbid humor, but it is scary, you know, on that side, but it is gut-wrenching too, you know.
And we all know this, people have done it, you know, that there are many a days where your eyes see something and your mind can't rationalize it.
Right.
And this was one of those things where, I knew I had one other person that was in the front of the boat. So at short stories, I rescued those three. And as I put the last occupant onto the boat, my boss said, go down and make sure there's nobody else there. Ugh. I dove down to the bottom to look and see if there was anybody that might have been thrown from the boat. And I could hear the boat up top take off because the Coast Guard was so excited about getting the people back in that they left me at the bottom of the lake. So when I surfaced, I was about a mile out, and I just thought, this is going to be a long swim.
They left you out there?
Yeah. So
that's unheard of.
My boss said, they had a good fisticuff basically in the boat, but they came back and got me. Life is good, you know, but that was one. And the other one, it was, I got called from home because we had run out of divers. It was same thing. It's middle of winter, middle of the night. And a gentleman tried to evade from the police, fell through the ice in a pretty decent current. So we were diving under the ice in a current to locate this gentleman. And we did. But it's one of those where it's much like a fire. You find something and you're like, oh, I think this is it. And you got to bring him to your face piece. You know, and then when you do, you get that. I don't mean for it to be humorous. It's very, it's disturbing when you're doing it. I will say that my thought always was, you know, I can't think of one person we had that we recovered.
Right.
You know, we recovered the bodies, but I can't remember one save. But I can say this, that to me, it was closure for family.
Mm-hmm.
I was bringing them home.
Right.
And that's why I dove.
Yeah, and that's what now let's talk about the personal aspects. So as you were saying there, when we laugh and joke, we're not joking of the situation, but how do you deal with that? You know, how do you talk about it? You know, and when we're going one-on-one, do we stay somber? How do we deal with this stuff? And, you know, it's a tough thing. And I think a lot of firefighters struggle, whether they're on a dive team, whether they're in a small department, they had their first grab and they didn't. The person didn't survive, you know, it's a tough thing to deal with. So here's my question to you. Obviously, in the moment, there's that shock and, oh my gosh, there's someone here. Then you get them on the boat. Then there's the back at the firehouse where you're starting to process it. But there's also that long-term processing you got to go through with it. How would you deal with that back when you were the firefighter? Would you work your way through those situations?
You know, that's changed over the years. And it's changed over the years because of my, you know, again, I was raised Catholic, so it's not like Christianity was something that was new to me. But when I took myself down to the bowels of despair, and I finally realized that I couldn't change it, and I asked for God's help, and he gave it to me, and he's, you know, never left me.
Mm-hmm.
My thought of how I did that changed. My thought of how I handled that changed. But certainly, I would say this, you know, we go back to the firehouse, and I would bet 90% of the firehouses in this country, it becomes I'll call it a smoke and a joke. You know, let's get back in the firehouse. You get some chow out and you vent all that stuff out. And, you know, you talk about it with the brothers. And you do have some black humor and dark humor. And you go about your business. As far as beyond that, you know, I'm very good. And some people would say very wrong. That I had no problem locking things down.
Mm-hmm.
I have file cabinets full of ugly, horrible things that are in my head that stay there. And then every once in a while, you know, something crashes into them and they spill out.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned through some good mental health initiatives and through having a great counselor when I was middle of my career that, you know, they taught me how to deal with some of that. But most of the time, no, man, I just lock it all down. I'd lock it in and it'd stay there. It'd be that. And it stays there. And you just keep stuffing that closet full of bad things, you know. And some days I think, and I really don't want to compare military because military, you know, the difference between us and the military is when you're in the military, you have to take life.
Mm-hmm.
And And that's that, you know, I don't think there's no human that's programmed to take life, but unless you're crazy. But
right.
But again, a lot of people do combat and then they're out.
Mm-hmm.
And we do 30 years of it.
Mm-hmm.
30 years in the same place, seeing the same things, going to the same fires, watching the same inhumanity to man. And I just wonder, you know, if you collect the two, are they equal? You know, is there as much messed up in this brain as there would be somebody who maybe had some combat duty? I don't know. Yeah. And I'm sure that people think, oh, you're nuts. But
no, I hear you on that. So the way I look at it like this is I'll go and teach these classes. And I truly believe I'm the last guy that should be teaching PTSD like classes. I'm more like an awareness. I'm like, bro, you want to talk to me on how to be aware of it, how to fix it, man? I'm going to take you on all different roads because that's what Christ does. Because even though they say, put it at the foot of the cross, what does that truly look like? You know, what scripture am I using? What brothers am I walking along with to do that and stuff? But what I truly believe is with my folks in the military that I've talked to is they've experienced trauma. Guys in the fire service and gals in the fire service, they've experienced trauma. Folks in police department, they've experienced trauma. Well, trauma causes pain and pain sucks. And so I think one of the things we do get wrong on the personal level and even on the diagnosing level is trying to compare, you know. I say don't compare and just understand that if a guy in the military gets kicked in the shin and I get kicked in the shin, both of our shins are hurting, but our responses to it may be a little different, you know, and stuff. Or maybe I got kicked in the shin and he got kicked in the privates, you know. At the end of the day, trauma causes pain and pain sucks. And I just want folks to understand that they don't need to sit with that because we all have the filing cabinets. You know, I explain it with every scene I responded to and all, everyone responded to, we would leave the best piece of ourselves there. Meaning we showed up highly trained, highly skilled, even if it was just for a medical call and it was to put grandma back in bed or something, you know, we left the best part of us there, but we picked up the worst part of that call. And as silly as this may sound, the worst part of that call may have been just picking her up and straining your back at 2 a.m. You know what I mean? You pick something up for it. Yeah. But over time, every call you're picking up a piece. So you have that where the long-term trauma can wear you down. I'm not going to say it always going to wear people down because the long-term trauma didn't wear me down. Then you may have a scene where, I don't know, bro, why did this dead child not affect me as much as this one? I can't explain it. They both hurt. They were both sad, but I didn't take this one home with me like I did this other one, you know? And people say, well, maybe it looked like your child, or maybe it looked like, it's like, I don't know why it affected me. But what I want to tell people is that you need to get help. And ultimately, without Christ, you're not going to get that true help and that release that you need. Because even with Jesus in your life, a lot of those same traumas are going to come back. But the beauty about it is, so is Jesus to fight them away, you know, and that's just something I like people to hear, especially coming from someone of, you know, that experienced things like you've experienced.
Well, and you're spot on. I mean, you know, I'm a big believer in this. I believe that there is a, you know, our Creator, He created us wanting us to long for Him. And He put a hole in our heart that only He can fill. And because, you know, we're knuckleheads,
mm-hmm.
we try and find and fill that with everything else but. And when we have trauma, you know, and I'm going to speak for myself. I'm, you know, when my brother in 1984, my brother who was a firefighter with me, on his way to work, he called me the day before, and I unfortunately was having an argument with my wife. And I said, Charlie, I'm going to see you tomorrow at training. I'll talk to you then. I got to go. I can't chat. And he said, all right, no problem. I'll see you tomorrow. So anyway, on his way to work, there's a very familiar bridge in the city of Milwaukee. It's called the Dan Hone, and it crosses our river. And it's, if you know anything about Milwaukee, there's a lot of pictures of this is our beautiful Dan Hone Bridge. And mm-hmm. at 07:45 in the morning, he decided that he would park his car, walk off that bridge and drop himself 180 feet to the water below.
Ooh.
In the process, losing his life. And where I'm going with this is that took a lot out of me. And I spent a year looking for that thing that was going to put it back. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was in direction that I shouldn't have gone on, but that's what we do. You know, drinking with the brothers, because that's going to make it better. And then drinking at home, and then telling your family, you don't understand, you don't know what it's like, and all those things that go on. And it literally is one of the things that brought me to the lowest point in my life where I said, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm losing my family. I have a 2-year-old son. This is a disaster. I can't get out of this. I'm on the verge of you know, if all I need is one bad driving ticket, because I'll admit I might have got behind a wheel when I shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a disaster for me. Right. I would have maybe lost my job. I lost my family. And, you know, and the short story is that, you know, I got to that point where I just looked and I said, God, I you got to help me. I can't do this. I can't figure it out. I don't know what to do here. I'm losing everything I have. And in that second, in that millisecond, he filled that hole and he said, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was bizarre because it all started getting better. And
wow.
So I say this because I'm trying to stop people from chasing all the other things first, because I can tell you from experience, whether it's, you know, wine, women, or song, those three things aren't going to make a difference. Only God's going to make that difference. Only he's going to be the one that says, I feel that pain. You know, I think that, and today I think is a banner day for it, because today I look and I think God gave his son, his only son, sent him to earth. Where today, or we celebrate, not celebrate, we you know, we witness it today, right, that he was brutally beaten at our hands, nailed to a cross, lost his life, and still loved us.
Right.
We did it. And I look and I think that all of that, you know, that's how much God understands grief. You know, so when we say, you don't get it, we don't understand the loss, you don't understand what we saw, really? He watched his own son get nailed to a cross by people that he knew.
Right.
The only way to save us was that.
Right.
Holy cow.
Yeah. You know, and for the listeners, that we were doing this taping on Good Friday, you know, and stuff. And it is, you know, it's such a monumental. And when you say celebration, yeah, it's weird. We are celebrating the death of Christ, but we're also mourning it because we're so undeserving of it. You know what I mean? And stuff. So I hear you on that. You know.
And let's face it, if it ended here, mm-hmm, then what difference would it make? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't end here.
Right.
It begins Sunday.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and that's the beauty of it, is that, you know, God arose him from the grave as proof, as acceptance, as this was the perfect sacrifice, which now gives you and I, or anyone who puts their faith in him and the gospel message becomes your truth and stuff, an eternity of perfection. But in the meantime, like you just mentioned, I mean, sharing that story with your brother about with me, I mean, I knew a little bit about it, but thank you for sharing that, bro. I really appreciate that. What it does is it gives me hope that what you went through, your family went through, his family went through and stuff, that without Jesus, what would it all mean? You know what I mean? And stuff that we're, what hope would you have? I mean, what reflection would you have except to keep reliving it over and over and over again without hope? And that's what I tell people, without hope, life sucks. I mean, life's as rough as it is, and it's caused by us. We, when people say, oh, it's Adam and Eve. Nah, bro, we are Adam and Eve. Okay. Let's be honest. We brought sin into this world. Our body chases them. But I want to hit something that you nailed on there. Was I try to talk about it a lot because I lived in the darkness for the first 28 years of my life. And I tried to fill that darkness of even from my earliest childhood into my mid-20s. I tried to fill it with even the fire department. Well, if I start helping other people, it's going to make me feel better, right? Well, there's momentary, you know, frontal lobe type stuff where you get that shot of adrenaline. It feels good, but it's not everlasting. I was the classic California firefighter, big race truck with the boat. You know, I had a house that everyone would look at and go, wow, did Martha Stewart, you know, do that house? Because I had perfection around me. I thought perfection would make me better. And it wasn't perfect, dude. All of that stuff, the emptiness and black hole inside me would just tear it up, eat it up, spit it out, say, give me some more, you know? And it wasn't until, like you said, when you're at that moment, if some people call it their bottom, whatever you want to call it, but it's that moment when Christ becomes real because you call out to him. Because who's going to call out to something that's not real? Universe, save me. You know, I mean, think about it. I'm not going to sit there and pick up a pretend phone and say, hi, Paul Conway, how are you? I'm going to call out, Paul, bro, I need you, bro. Help me out right now. I'm having some struggles. You're calling out something real. And the moment that Christ becomes real, now you have something sustainable. You have the rock, the foundation to grow from. And when things happen, like what happened with your brother and many other things since then, I'm sure have happened to you too, where you get knocked off that feeling good, instead of falling back into the pit of hell, you fall back into the arms of Jesus, who is the rock of our foundation, and we start working upwards, you know, bro? And so I really appreciate you sharing that story, because I know for a fact it's going to bless many people.
Well, you know, people just need to, know, and you know, we had a couple of minutes off air, you know, just about today, but people need to understand that, you know, it's just an ask away. Mm-hmm. It's an ask. And there are days that, you know, even to this day, when those things come out, those, you know, if I get something that sneaks out of that file cabinet or you know, like today, when I said, today's not, doesn't really seem to be a good day for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that, all I got to do is I just got to say, you know, God, Jesus, fellowship with me. Be with me. Mm-hmm. Give me a walk. Just walk with me. Let me know. Right. Just walk with me.
Right.
And be there with me. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know that people could say things, well, that's just your head, that's whatever. But the reality is, no, I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
I literally feel it. And it's like, okay. And it's almost that breath of,
right,
I can move forward now, you know. So it's just an ask,
right? You know, the apologetics will explain why Jesus is real and give all the proof and all that stuff. And I tell people, I know that Jesus is real, that God is real, that the Holy Spirit is real, because I can't explain it. I just want to say, because I feel it. It's like I can tell you that a chair across the room will probably hold me up, but until I truly sit in it, I don't have faith in that chair, you know? And it's the same as Jesus. I know that's a totally downplay of the analogy, but until you feel the true help of him, man, you know, and I'll throw it out there, because I love, you know, every part of my ministry is transparency to a level, you know, and stuff. I want people to see some, like, you know, I write things about, bro, I could probably sell a crap ton more books if I had the, hey, look, it's a picture of my book and all this stuff you're supposed to do. But I can't do that because it's not me, because when I'm not feeling good and I'm not excited, it's hard for me to fake it. And that's why I so appreciate talking with you today, because I'll throw it out there, was before we went on, I asked you like casually, hey, how's it going? You said, hey, man, it's a tough day today. And I love that about you, because then you still, another person may say, oh, well, then why don't we come back when it's a better day? Hell no. Oh, excuse my language. Heck no, dude. Let's hang out and let's talk when it's on your bad day. Because why do we always just portray the chirpiness and the happiness? Dude, we got to show all levels, because everyone's experiencing something, and we got to keep on keeping on and pour into others, even when we're struggling, you know, dude? So I appreciate that of you, bro. Seriously, of your transparency and just everything that you do to help the brothers and sisters out there.
Well, you know, and I thank you for that. But I also know that it, you know, just us chatting here, just us talking about it, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It went away. It left. Mm-hmm. It left because I'm sitting here talking with a friend and we're talking about a pretty great subject. But
right.
But it's gone. And right. I think people need to realize sometimes that you have a choice in the long run. You can have this little thing happen and then pile little things onto it. And your day becomes an absolute crap show.
Right.
Or you can have something bad go wrong and maybe add one or two onto it and then say, stop, I'm done. Stop. We're not doing this. We're not going down this path. And a lot of times I think it is just a matter of chatting. And we're chatting now. And you know what? It literally, right, whatever was going on is gone.
Right.
Because it's a great day.
That's what we call a Christ-centered conversation between brothers. And the Bible's clear. You know, people sit there and say, wait, am I allowed to be friends with non-Christians?
Yes, you totally are. Yes. But don't go heavy that area, because they're not going to be able to give you that Christ-centered situ a conversation like we had. This is why the iron sharpens iron, that we come alongside of brothers and we talk, because when we are talking, we're making sure that we're trying to wrap everything around scripture. Let scripture guide what we're saying, even though we're not quoting it verse by verse. We're letting it guide our hearts, our minds, and prayerfully our tongues and stuff. So things like that can happen. And that's something I just want the brothers in the fire service to hear, because people look at me and they'll be like, oh, okay, here comes Jason, the Christian fireman. Oh, and I told Chief Gary Ludwig, I was talking with him yesterday and stuff. And a guy not too long ago from regardless of where it is in the United States, it was a mid-sized department, and he was a rescue guy. And bro, he came at me heavy. He came at me so heavy, dude. And he was like, talking fire, and I don't know how it is. And finally, I never throw this out, but I did with this brother. I said, shut up for a second. And he did. And I go, bro, I fought more fire in my probationary year than you have so far in your 16 years on the job. So just take it down a notch, kid. Dude, it's very rare that I'll do that. But you know where I'm coming from, because you don't want to.
Oh, I do.
I get it. Like, yeah, it's like, dude, and you know, and I was talking with Gary, because we were talking about his days at St. Louis, which are like Milwaukee, which are like Oakland, where we're this big city fire department. We've experienced it, and we're not better. We're so not better than anyone else. But no. If you have to have me reach into that tool compartment and pull out that Halligan and turn it with the non-pointed side and crack you in the helmet with it, I will every once in a while, you know. But brothers also need to understand it's okay to talk about God and Jesus and your faith and stuff. And don't be that burden in the firehouse and pour it on to people all the time. Live it. Love on them. Show them what it's about, man. And that to me is where true courage comes from, is when you do that. Bro, we can all run into a burning building. Anyone can. Even a non-trained person can put on a turnout coat and I could drag them in. But it takes courage to walk into a place and offer Christ crucified to a group of people who you know need it, but don't force it down their throats either, you know?
Well, I do. And I think that, you know, I think that we sometimes stumble on that, because I think we need to be bold. You know, like you said, I think it's funny that we would make any hallway, do any, you know, do whatever we got to do to get things done. Yet somehow we might be apprehensive to let people know of our faith. And I know, you know, I make a habit of it intentionally, that I tell people no matter what, hey, God bless. Have a wonderful day today. And when I first started doing it, it seemed uncomfortable. You know, like I'm going to say, hey, God bless. Somebody's going to go, hey, right here. Well, you know what? Let them. Because more often than not, the answer back is, well, that's very nice. God bless you too.
Mm-hmm.
So, totally. You know, and that's, and what do we know? You know, Christ says we should be bold in letting people know. And I understand what you're saying, because, you know, we had we had two captains on our job. One became a chief, the other one stayed captain. And they were continually pushing the faith. And it, you know, it was uncomfortable. And then it became, you know, and I think one of the things that, and we all have a different walk with faith, and we're all at different stages. But I think one of the things that was always, or was disheartening amongst both of them, is those that are proud, and those that are, have pride in their faith, the devil loves it, and the devil looks for them, and the devil comes for them. And both of those guys, unfortunately, the devil got to them, and they did things that they shouldn't have done, certainly not as strong Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did it, then, of course, what happens? Look at those guys.
Right.
You know, oh, the big Christian out chasing around girls on his wife and got caught at it. Oh, how's that working?
Right.
You know, so that dampens everything. But I think that there's I think one of the things people need to remember is some of the guys I hang around with, or like you said, that circle of men that I really depend on, that iron sharpens iron, they're either firefighters or they're military from some pretty high speed places. All tatted up, and you know, I mean, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. And they'll admit, some of them will admit, yeah, I probably swear more than I should, but they're strong men of faith. So, you know, don't judge, you know, not every Christian looks like Ned Flanders, man.
I mean, right.
It's not that way.
No, trust me. I take that beating all the time and stuff, you know. I was like, wait, hold on, this surfer from California that even at the age of 50 with a broken hip will get on a skateboard and skate with his sons, preaches the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm like, yeah, I do. But what I love in there, it's just like, it's who I am, bro. I just, you know, and in the authoring world, dude, I'm telling you, like, I will not beat down any authors. I think they're all amazing because they use their gifts and abilities, but I'm not a Bob Goff. I'm not Bob Goff. I'm not this. I'm not, hey, it's like, I just can't do that, bro, and stuff. But I just try to be the me that God created me to be and then plant the seeds, because you hit the nail on the head, is pushy with faith is not cool. We haven't been called to push. We've been called to plant. Bro, I don't even push my faith down my kids' throat, because I pray for my kids to become Christians based on what they see me doing. They see my faith, how I'm living it out, the ways that I'm doing things, and that I'm not too much of a hypocrite, because our kids are the first to see the hypocrisy in our lives. Let's be honest, you know, and stuff. And I don't push it on them, but I make it clear, hey, I want you guys to study and do this, but they're coming to Christ. That's between them and God, not them and me. But I have been called to also raise them up, not as Christians, but with my Christian values, praying they'll become Christians. You know what I mean? And that's just what I try to do when I talk to people. I understand, like, out here in California, bro, I came to Christ in the middle of Sodom and Gomorrah. My firehouse was just below Berkeley and across the bridge from San Francisco, man. You know, it's like, and even there, when I'm hanging out there, I understand that the folks are disgusted by not me, but what they sense out of me. And I understand that their eyes are still scaled and their ears are still shut to my truths. Now, therefore, if I go and I just start forcing them onto them, I'm creating more harm, bro, as opposed to just showing up and showing them the love while standing freaking firm in my faith. And I'll throw it out there. If people looked into my theology, they would be like, yo, Jason is actually way more conservative than some of those guys in the 15 and 1600s. You know, you think Calvin was stern in his faith? Bro, my theology runs even more conservative. But if you notice, I don't throw my theology onto people. I throw the love of Christ onto people and I stand firm in my truth, you know, and stuff. So I love that. Hey, bro, as we start getting ready to wrap up here, I mean, I'm going to bring you back on just so you're clear on this. And that's not, now that you're retired, I can give you a direct order there, Chief. So I'm going to be bringing you back on in the future, because there's so much more I want to hit on the faith-based side and stuff too. And just, you know, talk about your vulnerabilities and things that you've gone through and some actual incidents more and above that you've witnessed in the firehouse and stuff, and not just personally, but yeah. Well, bring you back through.
And I got to say that I appreciate that, because one of the things that I find interesting when I go out with people, with an organization that does some teaching and outside Conway Shield, and I laugh because I retired as a chief of ops, and the chief of operations rides a desk unless the world's burning down. And
well, operations chief, and I know the truth of that. That's actually the working chief of the upper chiefs, you know, so I get it. Yeah, you're doing more of that.
Yes, and that's what I say. We had three assistant chiefs. One did operations, one did training EMS, and one did administration, and I was the ops chief.
Yeah, you show up when it's falling apart, bro, and you try to put it back together. Okay, let's keep it real with what you. And just so you know, I have full respect for my chiefs. You know, I just have to joke with chiefs and stuff, and I'll tell you a story offline about one.
No, I know, but I what I find is that I work with these guys, and I look at them some days, and I want to say, dude, you know, I didn't come on the job as the assistant chief of the fire department. I spent 20 plus years in busy companies, both as a firefighter and as line officer and then as company commander. I just didn't pop into this chief spot. I am, you know, and again, it's not like I want to say I, as you were saying, it's not about that, but it's about, you know, there's some pretty interesting experiences there that I try to pass along to people because I know they're going to come into them. Because one thing for certain, whether it be Oakland or Milwaukee. I think of one day as a battalion chief, I was sitting in the rear lot. We send two chiefs to a fire. One takes the command, and the other one sits in the rear lot, observes the seaside, and just kind of sits in the car, listens to radio traffic, makes sure there's that nothing's going sideways. And I was sitting there, and I'm looking at this 2.5-story frame, which is our bread and butter work. And I thought, I've been in this building as a firefighter. I fought fire in this building at this address when I was a firefighter.
Love it.
20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still going to a fire in the same darn building. I've just moved up and
ready. That's what we're doing. We have the same thing. It's like, bro, I put out so many room and contents fire up on the fourth floor, the third floor, the second floor. And guys will be like, no way, you've been to fire. I'm like, bro, I know this building, the ins and outs, the voids are here. I know we need to get it before it gets into the sockets and starts running the walls, dude. Yeah. No, that's so cool.
Nothing's changed. So that even as time goes by, there are things that our members are going to encounter that we've already had experience with.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be able to tell them, hey, look, let me give you an idea on this. And again, some days, because I don't get me wrong, when I was a line officer, the last thing I needed on anywhere was a chief. But, but they forget that, that's right. You were in a company. You did do some work. So I appreciate the idea that, well, give us a couple of stories from the, from the street. Cause that's.
Yeah. Well, we are. And so we're going to continue on just a few more minutes there. So if the listeners want to bounce right now, we're going to go on to some fire department stuff. Cause you got me there now, Chief. And we're going to go back and forth, and I know it will bless people, but there was a couple of times where what you're explaining, it was right there. Later in my career, when one of my buddies went up to the level of battalion chief, and he needed to promote. He was the perfect guy for the position. Some would say, oh, well, he went fast. No, he went at the right pace for the knowledge base that he had, and he could absorb it and pour it back out onto people. So some people say they go too fast. Others say, don't do that with this amount of years. Well, some guys don't need to be held back for that many years because they just get the job. You know what I'm talking about. And my buddy was one of those. So we go to one fire, and he knew what my pet peeve was when I was a lieutenant was I hated talk on the radio. I just hated it, dude. I'm like, and he knew that too. It's like any good chief, as you said, could send their car and see what's going on with the smokes. He's going. So we pull up to a classic West Oakland Victorian, and it's going good on the second floor, which are fun fires because you don't have to mask up till you get into the mid stairwell, mask up, then go in and you get to see the fire and go hit it. So we're going up. Well, this fire started pushing down on us. We didn't realize a basement fire that went up. So we had a little more work on there. And the smoke's pouring out the front door, and he knew we were hitting it and stuff because I called for a second line in, and he keeps saying, engine five, give me a report on conditions. And I didn't answer. Engine five, give me a report on conditions. Well, I knew he was seeing steam flying out the windows at this point. The next thing he sees flying out the window is my handheld radio. I threw it out the window too. Stuff. But again, that was because he was a friend of mine. And those little antics that I would never tell people to do now or play with. And stuff. There's that fun side of the job too, and stuff.
Yeah,
and
of course
not. And I believe that those things can come into training. But anyways, Chief, I mean, seriously, thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to give you the last couple minutes here to just say whatever you would like to say, tell people how to get a hold of you, to buy your awesome shields, learn more about your training, and just whatever's on your heart. So have at it, Chief. Take the last couple minutes.
Well, I guess we're going to round it up with saying thank you for allowing me to be here today. It does mean a very lot to me. I guess I want your listeners to know that, Christ is always there for you. And even in the darkest times, in the worst times you can come across, he will always be there for you, and he will always hold your hand and take you where you need to go. So don't ever find yourself, we can all be in dark places. We can all be in bad situations, and understand that there is nothing that is too bad. There's nothing that he will say, yeah, that's over the line. So you just need to call to him and turn to him. And, let's never forget that. And my other thing that I really want to pass along is it's more firefighter related. And that's that there's some discussion going on lately that the death of the brotherhood. And I say to all of us here that if that is the case, and if that is heading in that direction, then we are the only one to blame because we did not nurture it. We did not feed it. We did not take care of it. So much like when people used to say in the firehouse about, oh, the union's not doing their job, I'd say, time out, you are the union, my friend. There is no union. There is no little special man hidden behind a curtain somewhere. You are the union. So you get involved and change it. So I just, again, those two things I think are important to me. I always remember Christ is there for you, and I always remember that we need to take care of each other. We need to watch out for each other. We need to be there for each other. And that we do that through faith in Christ. And we do that through the love that he gave us is the same love that we should be showering not only the citizens that we serve, but showering our brothers and sisters that ride with us. So with that, amen. You can reach out to me at conwayshield.com. I'd like to tell you all the great links and all those things, but I don't know them.
No,
but don't, conwayshield.com will get you there.
Yeah, we'll have your people hit my people, and there will be links on the show. But one thing I do want you to highlight is your new podcast, okay? Because you had this like incredible guest on earlier this week that I listened to, and I mean, he just
That dude was pretty good.
That guy, Jason Sautel, he knocked it out of the park. No,
dude, he was off the. Oh, and they say he's off the chain, baby.
He's off the chain. But yeah, let's hear about your podcast and where the folks can find that.
So I am not a social media guy, and I really believe this was the hand of Christ. He kept telling me that I need to do this. I need to start a web. I would see things on social media and I would be angry because they are also negative. They're also, you know, everything's bad regarding our wonderful profession. And I kept getting this thing, start a podcast, talk to people that are positive, talk about the positive. And I kept thinking, no, I'm not going to do that because this face is, as we can see, is not really designed for media.
I'm right there with you.
Well, as it turned out, it wouldn't go away. So we did. We started a podcast. We're weekly on YouTube at Conway Shield on YouTube. And right now we bring on a guest every week. And the whole point of the podcast is to bring positivity to the world and positivity to the fire service. We do address some problems, and what do we think about fixing? How do we think about fixing them? And at times we will discuss what people do beyond their fire service careers, because I think that's vitally important to have balance. But basically, as we say, it is Beyond the Shield is where we bring patriots and heroes.
Love it.
To discuss the modern topics, discuss the topics at hand today.
Love it. That's so good. And we'll definitely, like I said, we'll link that in there too when we get all that together. Anyways, Paul Conway, bro, it was such a blessing to have you on the show today. I know the listeners are going to want you back, so we'll get that worked out in the future. But again, thank you so much for coming on.
Jason, thank you very much. God bless you, my friend.
I hope you found this episode as encouraging as I did. Be sure to click the like, subscribe, or whatever button you see that will notify you of future shows, because we have some awesome guests lined up that you're not going to want to miss. Until next week, remember this, my friends. Jesus is all we need. I love you guys. I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on the podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you will find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more. So head on over to lifeaudio.com and check them out.
God's Word will change our life, but sometimes it's hard to know where to start. Well, that's where I come in. I'm Jody Nisnik, host of So Much More, Creating Space for God, a scripture meditation podcast. And each week, I guide you through a scripture, giving you space to listen to the Spirit and pray about what's on your heart. Then we have a thoughtful conversation with guests to help us go deeper. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.